We're always chasing the next big invention, the gadget that promises to make life easier, and it's those new ideas that tend to grab the headlines. But on Extraordinary Every Day, we turn the spotlight elsewhere, focusing on the ingenious designs that have been with us far longer and that many of us use every day. Today, we're exploring the surprisingly fascinating world of gravestones. It's an epitaph meant to endure across generations, your final footprint on the world. Gravestones may be stark reminders of our mortality, but they're also rich repositories of history and memory. So what can the design of these markers tell us about the people they commemorate and the eras they lived through? And how have these designs changed over time? Satch Killam is a stonemason and heritage specialist who works at Rookwood Cemetery in Sydney. Hi, Satch.
Hello.
Let's get into headstones and gravestones then. And I suppose the first really obvious question is, what's the difference between a headstone and a gravestone, and why is that a good thing to know about?
I think in this space and in stonemasonry, there's often people will say something very definitive, but really it's all right to have a little bit of difference on this. A gravestone is the wider term, and a headstone is actually quite literally started off being as a headstone. You'd have a headstone and a footstone, or perhaps a headstone, a body stone, and a footstone. So you're indicating where the person is. But I think the idea of a headstone is actually quite evocative, because we want to know where the person's buried and which is the head of the grave. So we orientate ourselves. We know where the dead person is, which is kind of culturally significant, if you think about it, that's important to us. It's not just a space, it's an exact space.
What's the earliest recorded gravestones that we know of then?
That's a very difficult question, because that's how you define gravestones. So, you know, very early peoples often had grave goods. There's different markings. Often shells were associated with burials. Shells are a very good object, and they'll come up into our conversation, I'm sure, later, because shells are calcium carbonate, so they have a double diffraction, and they're very bright. They're bright in dusk. They're bright at night. You can see them by the moon. So they're a fantastic way to mark a grave and to be able to find a spot. And really, that's one of the key elements of a headstone, a gravestone, is that you want it to be seen. You want it to be a place that someone knows to come to, and a place of remembrance. But it all starts with somewhere that you have to be able to find it.
I would have thought that sandstone was too soft a stone to use for a gravestone or a headstone, because it does weather sandstone more than something like granite. I mean, these must be choices that are being made all the time, I suppose, about the longevity of these markers.
Yeah. People choose their gravestones based on what's available. So the cemeteries that look the best to us now, that are the most accessible, are where the stone was actually a good stone for cemeteries. However, masons have known this, architects have known this for a long time, what is a good stone. And Sydney sandstone, there are Sydney sandstones that are fantastic and will last hundreds and hundreds of years, if not thousands of years.
So what are the oldest cemeteries in Australia then?
I just came from the oldest extant cemetery in mainland Australia, which is St. John's Parramatta, right across from the ABC studios. And a fantastic place to look at if one is interested in the history and the evolution of gravestones, because it's all written there in the landscape. The oldest cemetery that's kind of still active is actually in Norfolk Island, and is fantastic cemetery to go to if you ever have the opportunity. Coral gravestones that have lasted hundreds of years. So a coral limestone.
And you work at Rookwood Cemetery, is that correct?
Yes, so I work for Metropolitan Memorial Parks, which actually is 8 cemeteries in Sydney and Sandgate in Newcastle.
Right. And that, I mean, I'm thinking of Rookwood, and that was sort of mid-Victorian period in my architectural mind. So what was it about that Victorian period and the gravestones from then that was so specific, do you think?
Well, the Victorian period, and especially the kind of later Victorian, is just a remarkable time for cemeteries because they were so culturally popular. They were a place to come and visit, have a picnic, spend your day in a way that would, you know, increase your morals and be good for the soul. And cemeteries were picnic places and places to visit. But they were also, as you've said, architecturally interesting, and the Victorians and their kind of love of death and the symbols of death mean that Rookwood is just full of extravagant mishmashes of different times of what would be potentially somber gravestones in the past, put together flamboyantly in the late Victorian period.
So talk to me about the technology of gravestones for a second. And I'm thinking at this point of things like engravings and the fonts and the motifs and those sorts of things that are all embellished upon the stone. How has that changed over time?
Well, it has changed a lot less than one might expect. So at St. John's Parramatta, where I just was, the earliest gravestones, so, you know, 1790s through to the 1840s, those monuments, which you see in the earliest cemeteries in Australia for the first 50 years, are all ones that you would see, and you can see at the back of the Parthenon, if you go down past the Agora in ancient Athens to the Kerameikos, a cemetery that was rediscovered and set up again in the 1860s. And the gravestones here, many of them would not be out of place at all in the Kerameikos. So the design is very much the same design with some new flourishes. So the Greeks used, we call them stabbed letters. So the letters were scratched and then stabbed in with a chisel. So they had rounded chisels, and it makes for a lettering that does stand up. And there's ancient Greek lettering that's great. But the Romans really came up with a new technology, which was to cut along the letter, and we call it V-cut lettering, and perfected it, you know, in a monumental scale. And that is something that survived really until sandblasting in the 1920s.
Wow. So that idea of technology that hasn't changed, I'm really fascinated by that, because I would have thought there'd be a very clear reflection of the sign of the times, if you like, in the stones themselves. But what you're saying is actually, though, there's this much longer enduring legacy that is a slow time there, which seems totally appropriate to a cemetery.
It is appropriate. Changes come slowly. Changes do come. So the Egyptians used granite, and for essentially 2,500 years, granite was too hard a stone to use for cemetery monuments because it was just so expensive and hard to work. And so in the middle of the 1800s, Scottish engineers developed a steam-powered bush hammer, which essentially allowed them to recreate, and it was a conscious attempt to recreate Egyptian technology. And I mean, it took us 2,500 years to redevelop the ability to work granite as gravestones. But you see that creep through the cemeteries. And so one of my coworkers has this great expression that at Rookwood, you can start in one era, and as you walk down a road, because Rookwood is such a large cemetery and it's such a outside of human scale, as you walk down the road, you can actually watch as the architectural patterns change, as we revisit Egyptian-style iconography, we revisit Greek, we revisit Roman, and then with the Victorians, we put them all together and make wonderful melanges. And then things become simpler as a lot of stonemasons were killed in World War I and World War II, and the trade really, well, dived. Lots of skills were reduced, and also with mechanization and mechanical cutting, skills were never lost, but they were, you know, they were no longer front and center.
Yeah, yeah. So what's that then done to the actual design of gravestones, you know, since that moment, with that sort of dearth of traditional skills? How has that changed the design of contemporary gravestones?
After World War II, labor became expensive. So a simpler gravestone and ones that could be mechanically cut. So we moved to desks and maybe a marble inscription plaque, but simplified versions, mechanical parts that can get cut by machine. And then the lettering eventually also becomes machine laid out. And now we have computer graphic lettering, which doesn't have the soul of the earlier lettering and certainly doesn't have the interest of perhaps the rustic lettering that we see in the very earliest of inscriptions before there were professional kind of monumental masons in Australia.
So I could definitely understand how you'd have a simplification of the headstones based on that idea of technology starting to get applied. But I would have thought maybe today with CNC milling and these kinds of computer-controlled processes, are we seeing a rebirth of more decorative and more elaborate headstones?
Yes, we're definitely seeing a rebirth, and some of them involve a lot of hand finishing as well. So it's a combination, and you could imagine that there is a future for that. The vast majority of gravestones now are granite, pre-shaped, done with machine, often finished in places where labor costs are much lower than here. So very little is done in Australia. However, there is that kind of higher end, and there's also natural burials, people having very simple gravestones again. So we're sometimes coming back to the head markers and the 1840s style, maybe just a person's name in some sandstone.
Tell me about the future then of the gravestone. And I'm thinking because, as you said, a gravestone or a headstone is a necessary mark left on the planet of someone who has passed. But I'm thinking those marks are being replaced by digital photographs and even avatars and all sorts of wild ideas about how to live on into the future. What do you think that means for the gravestone?
At some point, it may be time to retire the physical gravestone. I'm still hoping that I'll be around taking care of them and the next generations will be taking care of the old ones. I'm interested in this and certainly virtual cemeteries and reconstructing them so that you can go to a place that you're not at. I mean, yes, we can imagine that in 20 years, we may all be visiting places and not actually physically being in them.
Yeah. Virtual picnics.
Virtual picnics. And yet there's some quite confronting replications of people. I mean, the simple version right now is you have solar-powered little motion-sensored devices that as you come on a grave, someone will talk to you.
Oh my goodness.
Certainly more common than that, but already around in some cemeteries are ones where a song will play or something prayer will sound as you walk close to it. But yeah,
wow.
We can imagine.
Someone speaking from beyond the grave as you trip the motion sensor is so Victorian and so creepy.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, there are lots of creepy Victorian ideas.
It's such a beautiful history you've just given us there. And I particularly love the way you described walking through Rookwood as a kind of a physical archive or like flicking through the pages of history as you stroll amongst the headstones and the gravestones there. Thank you so much for sharing all that with us.
Not at all. My pleasure.
Satch Killam, stonemason and heritage expert at Rookwood Cemetery. And we've been getting some great ideas for extraordinary everyday, like Jasper, who suggested we look into umbrellas, which we will do in an upcoming episode. So if you have a similar object you'd like us to cover, send us an email to bydesign@abc.net.au. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, make sure you follow the show on ABC Listen. Just search Anthony Burke's By Design.